Welcome to Legal Talk, a monthly conversation about the American legal system with Minnesota Supreme Court Associate Justice Gordon Moore. Good morning, Justice Moore. How are you today, sir?
Good morning, Rich. Good morning, listeners. Whoops.
I turned on the wrong microphone there. I'm sorry.
Good morning, Rich and listeners. Great to be here on a crispy January morning.
Christmas, right.
You know, if we don't have this kind of morning in January, we got problems.
Well, we talked about this, I think, last year when we didn't have winter and it was very unsettling. I will whine and complain about this kind of cold all day long, but I also whined and complained because it wasn't this cold. So
right,
yeah,
right. And I did hear you and Tim lamenting about the status of things regarding Minnesota sports generally and the Vikings specifically, and you know the algorithms on social media send you what you want, even if you don't or shouldn't be looking at them.
Yes.
And I've been getting a lot of YouTube videos encapsulating former Minnesota Viking playoff.
I've been getting
disappointments.
The same thing.
Yesterday it was the 1970 divisional playoff game when John Brody brought the 49ers to Met Stadium and upset Gary Quazzo and the Vikings the year after Joe Capp took the Vikings to the Super Bowl. And I remember watching, no, this can't happen.
I got yesterday. I got the very famous Drew Pearson push off on.
1975. Yeah, 1975. How could we forget
the Hail Mary?
Yeah, you know that team. The Vikings purists, I think, will tell you there were two teams that the shoulda, coulda, wouldas in terms of the Super Bowl. It was that team and then the 1998 team with Randy Moss. Although I know there were a lot of injuries with that 1998 team, but those are the two teams that had they gotten there, maybe the stars could have aligned just given, you know, the Vikings, if people remember, were not the better team in three of the four Super Bowls.
Right.
I still argue that Kansas City team was beatable, and the Vikings did beat them the first game the next year. But the other three teams were juggernauts. I mean, Miami, Pittsburgh, and Oakland. I mean, those teams were teams of destiny.
They were, absolutely. I mean, was that the undefeated Miami team? That was the undefeated Miami team. That was the Steel Curtain, Pittsburgh Steelers. And then John Madden was not going to win a Super Bowl in his career.
Yeah, I mean, they had a great team, and you know that you look at what happened over the weekend.
Yeah,
you're right. Teams that have offensive and defensive lines and a great quarterback are hard to beat.
Yeah, they are.
You know, you end up, you could see the pressure that was being applied in times of need, and you know the Vikings just gave up way too much internal pressure. I mean, they did not give Sam Darnold those last two games much of an opportunity. Not that Sam, you know, did great, but it's hard when you know you've got about 2 seconds to get rid of the ball. Mm-hmm. You're going to get, you know, literally plowed over. It's probably hard to be focused on the entire field.
Yeah, I have a wish list during the offseason, and the top two spots are left guard and right guard. So.
Well, yeah. I mean, those of us who remember those great Vikings teams, it started with the line.
Absolutely.
Mick Tinglehoff, Grady Alderman, Ron Yeary.
Yeah.
I mean, all pro lines.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the defensive line, the Purple People Eaters, they were a force to be reckoned with. And so that made arguably some deficiencies on other parts of the team, you know, not so glaring.
Right. Exactly.
I mean, you could have a, you know, quarterback like Joe Capp, who is a kind of a swashbuckling sort of a, you know, unorthodox quarterback, to say the least.
Right.
But with that offensive and defensive line, he looked fantastic.
He did. Okay. Let's talk about, first of all, let's just kind of get the 400-pound gorilla out of the way real quick. There are certain things before the Supreme Court right now that you absolutely cannot talk about. That's on a lot of people's minds right now. Everything happening with the legislature has, well, not everything, but a lot of things with the legislature has come before the state Supreme Court. There have been some decisions made. There's another decision coming. You're going to hear some oral arguments on something. You can't discuss any of this.
Yeah, there have been two election contests. decided at the district court level, and then we issued our decision on Friday on the question of the validity of the writ of special election for mm-hmm. one of the two seats that was subject of one of those election contests. And then this Thursday, we have oral arguments on the questions related by the Secretary of State and the Democratic caucus in the State House about the legality of the organization of the Minnesota House. And those are obviously really important issues that are pending, and I'm not going to speak at all about any of those things, and I shouldn't. I understand they're on a lot of people's minds. I've had a lot of contact or just questions, you know, from mm-hmm. people, church, and that mm-hmm. sort of thing, and they know fully well that those are things that we can't discuss. Mm-hmm. Maybe in due time there'll be an opportunity for that. It involves some really delicate separation of powers questions mm-hmm. Between the two, really the judiciary and the legislature and the governor, too, in terms of, you know, setting these writs of election. And my hope here is that in the not-too-distant future, we can be beyond this and get to the people's business, because there has to be a budget passed this legislative session. And
it's, you can't say anything, but those of us were not hopeful about that happening anytime soon.
Yeah, it could be special election territory, special session,
yeah.
But we'll see. But yeah, I thought, Rich, we could maybe chat a little bit today about the TikTok case.
Yes.
That's something that doesn't involve the state Supreme Court.
Right.
It involved the U.S. Supreme Court. And I think it's something that, well, it's breaking news today with regard to, you know, TikTok apparently coming back online based on representations from the soon-to-be 47th president mm-hmm. about his efforts at trying to, you know, quote, deal with the issue, unquote. So maybe just a little bit of rewind here. And I am not an expert on TikTok. My children think it would be laughable for me to even be talking about TikTok. I'm not on the app. I mean, I get the general, you know, content issue provided there. But the case involves a law called the Protecting Americans from Foreign Adversary Controlled Applications Act, signed into law by President Biden last April. Mm-hmm. And that was basically the law that gave the Chinese parent company of TikTok, this company called ByteDance mm-hmm. Limited, it gave ByteDance 9 months to divest the U.S. company or be banned from operating in the United States. And so ByteDance brings a challenge to the act under the First Amendment to the United States, arguing that it would be a unconstitutional regulation of content banned by the First Amendment.
Mm-hmm.
And so the question is, was the law a regulation of content subject to strict scrutiny under the First Amendment, or was this a law that's justified on national security grounds, not content regulated, but only then subject to what we call rational basis scrutiny, which is a very deferential review of legislative actions.
Okay.
So basically the TikTok Ban Act prohibited any company from distributing, maintaining, or updating any entity classified as a foreign adversary controlled application within the U.S. And so the concern is that TikTok itself, the ByteDance company, is basically an arm of the Chinese government.
Sure.
And that it was an opportunity for data harvesting as well as potentially manipulation mm-hmm. of information on social media. Shocking that is even something that's being discussed, given
right.
some other developments that
exactly.
we've got right now.
Exactly.
The TikTok is classified as a foreign adversary controlled application due to its ownership and control by ByteDance. And so basically the law gave ByteDance until January 19th to complete a qualified divestiture, requiring ByteDance to relinquish any control over TikTok's U.S. operations and to basically sell it.
Mm-hmm.
And so there have been discussions about, you know, which suitors could potentially buy TikTok. And I think that's one of the things that's going to be going forward here. And so this has been going on for a while. If you remember, the soon-to-be 47th president in 2020 was opposed to TikTok.
Yes, he was.
In fact, cited and issued an executive order citing TikTok's ability to capture user data as a significant national security threat.
Mm-hmm.
And so the executive order prohibited certain transactions involving ByteDance, but that was blocked by federal courts. And so the Trump administration directed ByteDance to divest, but those efforts were stalled. And as negotiations with the Biden administration aimed at a non-divestiture agreement failed to resolve it. And so that's when Congress got involved. And, you know, the question of the ability of TikTok to collect data from more than 170 million U.S. users and how that could be exploited for surveillance, public mm-hmm. influence campaigns, harmful purposes, threatens national security. And so this case went to the Supreme Court, and President-elect Trump asked the Supreme Court to delay the TikTok ban.
Yes.
Now taking the side that he didn't take a stance on the merits of the case, but argued that the mandate requiring divestment by January 19th, one day before his inauguration, mm-hmm. Unfairly limited the incoming administration's ability to address the issue diplomatically. And so the act banning TikTok was, or at least requiring divestiture, was broadly supported by Republicans and Democrats. And in a unanimous decision, the Supreme Court upheld that law last Friday.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I haven't delved into the details of the rationale for it, but essentially the app went dark for a period of time.
14 hours.
14 hours, yes. Yeah. But apparently is no longer dark and is available on app stores. And so stay tuned.
Yeah.
This is in the, you know, only I can fix it category of discussions I think we've heard from time to time. And we'll see. Perhaps it can be. Perhaps one of the people that will be sitting on the inaugural dais today will be interested in buying it. But it, beyond just TikTok, it raises some really interesting questions about media and yeah. the control of media.
Yes, it does.
I have a good friend, Carleton College trustee and classmate John Harris, that founded Politico,
mm-hmm.
You know, online news magazine and Washington News Magazine.
I read Politico all the time.
Yeah,
by the way.
Politico's been a must read.
Thank your friend for it before me, please.
Yes, and that. Politico was sold to a German entity,
yep.
And this was mentioned during the oral arguments. You know, there's other media. I mean, the whole, you know, as well as I do, Rich, probably better than I do, that the whole world of, you know, control of media is changing drastically,
quicker than I can actually keep up with.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. The status of local news, you know, as you know, is unfortunate these days. You know. Control from outside corporations,
yep.
You know, kind of buying up local newspapers and media, you know, sources, and then their editorial boards,
yep.
you know, controlling or at least having
yep.
influence about, you know, opinions on particular issues that
yep.
may or may not reflect local sentiment.
Right.
I mean, these are all important questions, and, you know, I will just put on a shout out for KYMN as being, you know, independent from those trends, and the importance of that independence in terms of being able to give listeners, you know, hopefully a real unvarnished and fair assessment of what local issues are.
That's our mission. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah. You know, and so, you know, the question of content regulation versus, no, this is a national security regulation. This was at odds together in a very interesting oral argument that
yeah.
before the Supreme Court. And you know, the Supreme Court gets fantastic orders, and there were two on the side of TikTok and its content providers, a Stanford law professor, and then Noel Francisco, who was Trump's Solicitor mm-hmm. General in mm-hmm. the first administration, and then Elizabeth Prelogar, who I had my wife and I had the honor of meeting in New York a few years ago when I was out for an appellate judge training class. Elizabeth Prelogar is just a preeminent, was the Solicitor General under Biden, and just an outstanding oral advocate. And so you had, obviously, nine people in black robes that had strong opinions and feelings going at it for, you know, over 2 hours. And it
yeah.
was an intense argument. So we wait to see what happens with the incoming Trump administration. You know, Congress passed this law requiring divestiture. It was upheld. That divestiture has not happened. And there is an effort now to try to put this thing on hold and to prevent the app from going dark, to give the new administration a chance to see if it can get the app dealt with in one way or another.
Is this... Gordon, is this completely uncharted territory? Is there precedent anywhere for, and I guess I'm thinking specifically with media, for the U.S. government to tell a media company that it has to change ownership or it will not be allowed to operate within the borders of the United States? Has that ever, I mean, maybe that's a little specific, but has that ever happened before?
You know, Rich, I'm going to be careful to not comment on that because I don't want to wade into waters that my my knowledge level isn't where it ought to be. I mean, this is a really challenging issue here. I mean, you will get legal scholars on both sides of this issue that will argue back and forth about the legality of this law that requires divestiture and the national security issues surrounding it. I think there's a bipartisan belief that there are national security threats that are posed by TikTok right now. But by requiring divestiture, you are, you know, arguably censoring content providing social media content providers, which is a question of First Amendment. I mean, and so there are other countries of the world that ban apps. I mean, you can't go to Russia and just download YouTube videos that show carnage on the battlefield and Russians getting killed and people criticizing Putin. I mean, there's a very tightly controlled world of social media restrictions that are on the national scale.
There's plenty of countries that'll do that. I had a point I wanted to make and then I lost it. Well, there has been in the last, I think 10 years, a lot of conversation about free speech with regards to corporate entities and what constitutes free speech and do corporate entities even have a right to free, and it's been ruled that they do.
They do. American companies. I mean, that's one of the issues. I mean, obviously, a Chinese or company like ByteDance doesn't have that same level of protection. But and then, Rich, there's the whole other issue regarding regulation of social media relating to parental controls and the question of whether children are appropriately using social media and whether allowing kids to sit on cell phones, watching YouTube and TikTok videos all day is benefiting anybody, particularly when those videos go into some, areas that are clearly not age appropriate.
Right.
I mean, it's one thing to learn about, the Battle of Hastings or, Constitution or something like that. But if you are delving into some areas that are problematic, to say the least, that's a whole nother question. And, my wife and I have talked about this. I wonder if you've thought about this. You probably have, about college students these days. I mean, in 1983, if I went to the Carlton Library to sit down, I didn't have a tool in my pocket that I could pick out and just have access to any information I wanted to, frankly, to avoid dealing with the stuff that was right in front of me that I'm supposed to be dealing with.
Right.
And the level of distraction that social media and the internet provide isn't just limited to children. I mean, my gosh, the potential for all of us to become subsumed by that is there. And this is, kind of Brave New World stuff. I mean, the regulation of social media, the whole question of, fact checking, that's an issue that apparently Meta is not fact-checking anything more on Facebook now.
That's what they've said.
Whole issue of Elon Musk purchasing yep. Twitter and renaming it. You know, the question of people viewing, people characterizing fact-checking as censorship. I mean, that's been a point that's been made, or at least an argument that's been made. And so, yeah, it all is intertwined with, unfortunately, the political challenges of today. And I just hope that we don't lose sight of the First Amendment, but we also, you know, the old famous Justice Jackson comment that the Constitution is not a suicide pact.
Yeah.
I mean, we have to be able to maintain order and control in our mm-hmm. country and protect ourselves from foreign adversaries and mm-hmm. protect our people mm-hmm. from things that are bad. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, where are those lines drawn?
Yeah.
I mean, that's been the eternal question on the First Amendment.
I bring it down to a much more rudimentary level. I talk about this all the time, though. My favorite philosopher of the 20th century is Stan Lee, the creator of Marvel Comics and Spider-Man. And he said in the early 60s, with great power comes great responsibility. Free speech is great power. There is great responsibility to be held within that. And in this day and age, there's less and less responsible use of free speech, I think, these days.
It's a jungle on the internet right now.
It is
a real jungle. And our children are young adults now, and I saw the differences. Our kids were seven class years apart in high school from mm-hmm. oldest to youngest. And even in that time frame, the difference between our oldest and our youngest in terms of the amount of time and distractions with smartphones and those sorts of things. And now I see smartphones with children that are in, you know, young middle schoolers to, you know, older grade schools.
Yeah.
And, you know, I understand there's reasons for that, and they can be good. But, boy, there's giving children of that age sort of a, you know, just a kind of a carte blanche to look at anything they want to on the internet is just
tough.
Concerning.
It's tough. You know, and you bring up a college students sitting down at the library to study. If I'd had a cell phone when I was in college, I would have had to have limited myself to about an hour a day on that phone, or I would have flunked out of St. Olaf. It would have ruled my world. And it's really is a different age these days. And I don't have, even have a clue how it works anymore.
Yeah, it is. My wife and I saw, you know, a Complete Unknown over the Christmas break and just really enjoyed that. But, you know, I'm in that sort of Netherland between the baby boom and the Gen X mm-hmm. generations, mm-hmm. and I felt really baby boomery that night, you know, in terms of looking at the, you know, the period instruments and the, you know, mm-hmm. the period microphones and the, obviously, the analog taping that was going on and the relative simplicity of that compared to things that are going on today.
Right.
And yeah, it's tough, but say that Fine Arts Booster fundraiser was fantastic, Rich, at the Armory.
The Dylan show was a lot of fun, man. That was about as much fun as I've had at a musical event in Northfield in years.
That was wonderful. That was really well. Ray Coudray, what a
shout
job
out to Ray.
In getting those groups together. And,
yep.
Yeah, that was excellent. I understand it was very successful.
It was very successful, and Ray and everyone who performed that night needs to be should be very proud of what they accomplished. They doubled their goal that night.
Oh, that's
pretty great. Yeah,
that's great. So
so sticking with the 1960s for a minute. Today is the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Day. And I think it's. I always like to talk to our leadership about, and you're an elected leader, about the impact that Dr. King has had, not just during his lifetime, but afterwards also. What are your thoughts on Dr. King?
Very complex figure, historical figure. He stands for. a nonviolent form of civil disobedience that brought to light the cruelties of the Jim Crow regime in the South and the horror relating to it. There was a obituary in the Star Tribune on Sunday for a man who is one of the youngest freedom riders that was beaten by KKK members in 1960-61 during some of the early freedom rides. And, you know, the legacy of Dr. King that I always remember is his famous comment about the arc of the moral universe bends towards justice.
It's long, but it bends towards justice.
Yes. And you know, I think about that because difficult problems aren't going to be solved overnight. Difficult problems aren't solved by violence. Mm-hmm. I mean, the violence doesn't create any long-term solutions. Dr. King stood for nonviolent political resistance in resistance to unjust laws and unjust society, frankly. Mm-hmm. And I was born in the middle of that. I mean, yeah. I was born in North Carolina in 1963.
And, I didn't realize you were born in North Carolina.
I was. My father was a naval battalion surgeon in the assigned to the United States Marine Corps at Camp Lejeune.
Okay.
He was part of the group that was preparing for the invasion of Cuba in 1962.
Wow.
Before John Kennedy had his stare down with Khrushchev over the missiles of October. And I came on the scene the year after that, and Dad and Mom moved to Rochester for him to pursue a medical residency. But, you know, they talked a little bit over the years about, you know, on the base, obviously, you know, there was integration in the military, but off base, not so much.
Yeah.
Not so much. And, you know, if you watch the Apple TV Plus series Masters of the Air, the story of the 8th Air Force bombing.
Fantastic.
One of the best things that I have seen. I mean, I don't watch a ton of streaming television, but Austin Butler, I just became obsessed with that show. And one of the side discussions there was about the Tuskegee Airmen.
Yeah.
They brought the Tuskegee Airmen into the discussion.
Yep.
And here, you know, this heralded group of African-American pilots who were treated as second-class citizens by the people who were supposedly on the same side.
Yeah.
And these guys are going and doing very well against the Germans and were, of course, treated by the Germans as, you know, other people too. But it's just such a reminder today about where we were as a country and where we are right now.
Yeah.
And I think it's a major pause and reflect moment right now. And the irony of today being the day of the inauguration on Dr. King's, the day we celebrate Dr. King's birthday is not lost on me.
No.
And I think we all need to spend a moment or two today to think a little bit about that and what we can do to make our communities better, to make our communities more just, and the world more just.
Right.
You know, we've got fires subsuming portions of, you know, Los Angeles. We have, you know, serious concerns about other types of environmental problems. We have, obviously, all sorts of concerns about human migration and the fair treatment of people. There's some really complicated global economic issues right now. A horrible war with Ukraine and Russia that seems to be more like World War One every week. And, you know, and then, of course, I saw drone footage this morning in the New York Times of what northern Gaza looks like right now. And it is just it's staggering. The drone takes off and as it goes into the sky, it's just a sea of destruction, this community.
Yeah.
And there's a line of, you know, Palestinians coming back to their community after the ceasefire, and what is there?
What's left?
What hope do you have there?
Right.
I mean, I just the scope of the problems around the world right now are high, and I hope for the sake of our country that our new administration is willing to engage in serious and productive discussions with those that need to be talked to work on getting these issues resolved or at least stabilized, because I know there are a lot of people right now that are really concerned about, you know, the direction that things are heading on an international level right now, and that Ukraine-Russia thing is a tinderbox that if it's not doused at some point in time is going to spread.
Well, it's one of those things, too. I mean, you bring up World War One. And I frankly, I think of it in terms of World War II also. I mean, it's one thing for Russia to have invaded Ukraine, but there's so much talk that after Ukraine comes Poland. And, you know, that's where World War II started right there, too. So that is speculation that is far beyond anything that we should be discussing today, but it does have to give you pause. It has to give you pause. And
but you know, Dr. King's legacy, the civil rights movement, brought forward fundamental changes in our laws.
Yep.
The Civil Rights Acts of the 1960s that really outlawed the Jim Crow regimes and public accommodations, voting. You know, these laws have withstood the test of time. There have been challenges, and there are challenges relating to the enforcement of them. Yeah. Passing laws and enforcing laws are different things.
Two different things.
And you know, it's incumbent upon Congress to, you know, keep the focus on on justice and making sure that the legacy of those who fought for those laws aren't forgotten.
Right.
We can't go back.
Indeed. Indeed. Well, Justice Moore, we thank you for giving us some of your time. We always really appreciate you coming in. Is there anything coming up with the court that we should be aware of that
we can talk about?
That we can talk about?
Well, our February calendar will start right after the first of the month. We have February is typically a little lighter month. We have generally 1 week of arguments, and actually it's worked out quite well that both January and February were a little lighter because of these election cases getting added to the calendar.
Sure.
So we've got a lot of work to do on existing cases to get opinions done, and then preparing for the calendar. We have, you know, seen a real uptick in the number of petitions for review. We're back in the pre-pandemic mode fully now, and so we are adjusting to that with our new colleagues who are doing really well, getting up to speed. It takes a little while as a new member of the court to get in line with the rhythms of it, and you know, I'm in my fifth year and I can't claim expertise in that, but it's a busy place. I mean, there's definitely a hum to the work there that's happening. That's a lot different than 5 years ago when it was pretty quiet, at least when I came on in the summer of 2020. So it's busy. It's active. We have a new chief judge of the Court of Appeals, Jennifer Frisch, who started after the first of the year. We have a new a Court of Appeals Judge Rachel Bond, who is sworn in, and the work in the district courts continues going on. We have, you know, retirements, newcomers. The governor has done a really good job of maintaining focus on getting judicial appointments filled, and so we don't have vacancies lingering for long. Obviously, there's going to be some really tough decisions regarding budgets. You know, the judiciary's budget's no different than any other state budget, subject to close scrutiny, and with a forecasted deficit in the next biennium, that's going to require some significant belt tightening in areas and looking at some things. And so, you know, we're trying to impress upon the policymakers that the judiciary's budget is a small fraction of the overall state budget.
Yeah.
But yet the constitutional importance of the judiciary, I think if nothing else, the events of the past week or two and going forward speak to the importance of that, to maintaining a well-funded and a judiciary that is functional and is you know, nonpartisan. We also are really trying to get work done on the jury compensation issue.
Oh.
We want our juries to reflect our communities, and at $20 a day, that's really hard. That's really hard. I mean, what a wealthy person can afford to give up to go to a jury for a for a trial for a week, and and somebody who's you know, not in that category, we need to be doing more on that. I think there's an agreement at some level that that has to happen, and we're hoping that that can be part of our fix going forward, or at least an attempt to work on diversification and you know, making a jury service, you know, truly available to all.
Yeah. Well, I'll be interested to see how that all transpires too.
Yeah, stay tuned. We'll have some things to talk about in February.
We will indeed. All right. Well, Gordon, thanks a ton. Yeah. As always.
Great to see you, Rich.
Always good to see you.
It's a new year, new administration, so onward and upward, right?
Indeed. Indeed. Here we go. All right. That is Gordon Moore, Justice Gordon Moore with the Minnesota Supreme Court, and he will be back the third Monday of February. Thank you, everyone, for listening. We will be back again next month.
This has been Legal Talk with Minnesota Supreme Court Associate Justice Gordon Moore. If you have questions for Justice Moore or would like to suggest a topic for future conversations, email us at contact@kymnradio.net.